friends.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Olivia.
And we are Podcast by Proxy, Canadian True Crime.
Welcome. We're live.
For the holidays.
For the holidays. Merry Christmas.
I wish I had
everyone.
Jingle bells right now.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Well, when this goes up, it'll be the day after Christmas, but I hope everyone had an amazing Christmas.
Happy Boxing
Day. Happy holidays. Whatever you celebrate, I hope it was happy.
Yeah, and I just don't want everyone to feel the need that they have to overspend on Boxing Day.
No.
Just because it's a cheap day to buy stuff doesn't mean you have to spend money.
No, I won't be shopping.
I think we all get sucked into that.
Yeah, I tend to do mine on Black Friday because I want to buy gifts and, like, a few last minute things for myself before Christmas when I'm not allowed to, like, buy myself stuff, as I went shopping today. I bought myself stuff 2 days before Christmas.
So I'm glad you say that you think that's a rule, though, because I was speaking with a friend of mine the other day and I was saying, but, like, you can't buy yourself something, because it was, like, yesterday. She wanted to buy herself something. I'm like, you can't buy yourself stuff this close to Christmas. That's, like, a big taboo kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rule. And she was like, I have never heard that before. I'm like, no, it's a thing.
No, it's definitely a thing, especially if you have, like, a partner or something that, like, they only have a certain number of things that they know that you like that they can buy for you unless there's, like, something big you asked for. However, I bought things today that I knew that Brandon wouldn't buy for me.
Fair.
You know, like, I know that you're not going to buy this because it's just, like, a normal product that I use and I just need a refill kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was left unattended at the mall for hours today. It's December 23rd right now, 2 days before Christmas, and it got a little out of hand, so.
Well, whatever.
But
treat yourself.
Yeah, this is like our Christmas episode. Our anniversary is coming up. Our 3-year anniversary of Podcast by Proxy is on the 29th. New Year's is coming up soon. It's a big day. It's a really big day.
It's a very big day.
It is.
It's a big week. It's a big couple weeks. The holidays. It's a lot of. It's a just a lot going on.
Yeah. Are you prepared for Christmas 2 days before?
I think so.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling pretty good about my shopping. The one or two things that we forgot, we're going to rip into town tonight, actually, because it's like 5:30 here. So we're going to go in like after dinner and try to like just scoot into a store and get out.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I'm actually not cooking this year.
Okay.
Simon is, because
I
did,
like,
Thanksgiving. But I'll
nice.
Be honest, because I'm such a control freak, I wish I was doing it. So,
that reminds me, I'm rewatching Modern Family right now. Well,
so
Brandon
funny.
And I are rewatching Modern Family, and we just watched the Thanksgiving episode where, like, Phil is cooking dinner, but Claire has a backup turkey that she's cooking in the crib in their garage. Hilarious. That just reminded me of that. I just picture you cooking, like, a backup dinner in your spare room.
Oh, I'm going to buy a backup dessert, but I plan to cook the one that I was challenged to bake.
Oh.
I'm going to try and make a Yule log myself.
Oh my gosh, that's very crafty of you.
Yeah, I think I can do it.
I can't bake, so.
I like baking.
I know you do. I'm more of a chef. I like to cook. Actually, I don't like to cook, but I can cook. You know what I mean?
Chef,
like,
Boy or Olivia?
I can cook. I can make fun Pinterest recipes, but as soon as you ask me to bake, I'm just absolutely gone. Take me to the store. I'm going to buy something pre-made.
I just love being in the kitchen. I should say that. Like, because I also love cooking, but I just love being in the kitchen.
I just like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the mess that it produces. I definitely am like a clean as I go girl because I can't handle like the explosion of dishes after cooking. So I just like clean up as I go. But isn't it funny?
I try really hard every time I bake to get better and better at using my scale and using as minimal dishes as possible.
Right.
So, and I mean, I think for baking, you should always bake with a scale just because it's so much more accurate.
Well, yeah, I don't bake. That's why I like cooking because I can just do whatever I want.
Eyeball, a pinch, a squeeze.
No, like, I mean, I use a scale, but for other reasons, not for recipe purposes. Isn't it funny though how you always forget something? We were just talking about that.
Always.
It's like I have gone to the store 8 times. We went out today as like our final hoopla. We had a list. We were out for hours. We still forgot stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm still gonna have, it's like it never ends.
I walked in the door because I worked today, and all I heard was, I've been to the corner store like 8 times today. They're gonna start thinking I'm weird.
Honestly.
Because as he's prepping dinner, he just kept being like, shit, I forgot this.
It's like, how do you still need more shit? I don't get it.
I don't know. But we do.
I know.
And you know what? I thought of another gift I want to get. So, like, if I can get it at the same place, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, before we start, do we have anything else to cover besides our Christmas rumblings?
No. I think just, like, as usual, coming up on another year, I think we appreciate everything mm-hmm. that you've done for us, listening and sharing and liking and reviewing, and we can't thank you enough. So we wouldn't really be hitting another year if it wasn't for you guys. It's so we true. Have to say thank you.
And on that note.
And just that we appreciate everything you do.
Yeah, on that note, actually, in the last week, we just hit another 100,000 downloads. So we're over 200,000 downloads now as a little show. And the first 100,000 downloads literally took us like over 2 years. And this one we just did in under a year. So that is some serious growth for us this year.
It was like 8 or 9 months. Like,
yeah.
We couldn't have done that without you guys.
Exactly. It's like Katie you did said, it. Like you guys did that. We would not be here without all of our amazing listeners sharing with their friends and family. So thank you so much. And
yeah, and interacting with us, like we said, the case suggestions, like every little thing that you guys do is worth its weight in gold for us. It goes a long way.
And I had the most fun the other day doing that little like small town question box on our Instagram. So many people responded.
I was laughing so hard at the answers that I was watching from my own Instagram. Because some of them I was like, ooh. I feel that in my soul.
I'm going to start doing more of those because those were really, really fun and you guys really engaged hard. So if you don't already follow us on Instagram at Podcast by Proxy, 2024 is the year that I make a comeback on the gram. And make sure you're liking wherever you're listening. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Share with anybody you know who likes true crime and isn't super serious because we're not super serious on this show. It's just kind of like who we are.
Yeah, we, you know, deal with a lot of our own shit day to day, and we sit down together as a way to just relax and interact with you guys and hang out with each other. So we have a lighthearted take on these cases.
We do. And you would think that I would maybe bring like a Christmas case or something today, no. But I did not.
Yeah, not shocking.
I didn't do that. So we're actually going to discuss a case suggestion. Now, let me tell you who suggested this case. I didn't come prepared.
Wah wah. She didn't do her homework.
No.
I had a teacher once that if you didn't do your homework or you got a question wrong or something, he made you do push-ups.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that like corporal punishment or something?
That's wild. Ah, this case suggestion was from a listener named Nikita. So thank you, Nikita, for your case suggestion. And today I'm actually covering the case of the missing O'Brien brothers. So this is a case.
Oh, yeah, I saw that email.
Yeah, this is a case of 3 boys who have been missing for 27 years. And so we are going to discuss that today.
That's so crazy. Like, to hear such a high number now, like, when I was a kid, that was just like, oh, yeah, whatever. Like, I probably would have just not cared about the number because I wouldn't have understood. But now, like, at my age, I'm like, 27 years?
This is a, like, a real mystery, too. This is a real mystery.
That's, oh, yeah. Okay.
So.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's. On November 9th, 1996, 3 boys went missing in Newfoundland, Canada after being abducted by their father. 27.
Ooh, we're going really east again.
Yeah, we're staying in the east on the east coast.
Dang.
27 years later, the boys are still missing, and their mother, Diana, is desperately searching for the answer to what might have happened to them. Adam, Trevor, and Mitchell O'Brien were just 14, 11, and 4 years old on November 9th, 1996. November 9th was a Saturday, and so this was a scheduled visit day with their father, 40-year-old Gary O'Brien. So we'll get into it a little bit. We don't know a ton about their family life before this, but we do know that Diana and Gary had separated.
You're going to get to it.
Yeah, there's unfortunately not a lot about this, but I will, like, about the background of that, but I will tell you what I know.
Okay.
The boy's mother, Diana Boland, who has now remarried and goes by Diana Saunders, said that this morning was busy for the two older boys, Adam and Trevor. They had gone on their paper route to deliver newspapers, and Trevor had actually gotten a new Chicago Bulls jersey that he was really excited to show his father that day when he was going to pick them up.
Oh my God, it's so wholesome.
So wholesome.
Okay.
So, like I said, we don't have a ton of information about the family life before this day, but we do know that Diana and Gary had separated, and he was living in the family home while she was living in an apartment. In Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. So he was in a town called...
Is that fairly close?
Torbay and Mount Pearl are pretty close together from what I gathered. But you know what? Okay. Let me tell you the exact distance.
Can you tell she's cushioning the case?
Cushioning it?
Yeah. Did you need a little extra detail?
Yeah, I might have, yeah.
So we fill it with geography.
Yeah.
Little podcasting trick. This is like behind the curtain, people.
Not as much as I used to. I feel like I used to go into like how many people lived in the town.
Oh, we both used to. We'd be like, what was the population? What's their national flower?
I really don't do that as much anymore. Okay, no. So it's like a 24-minute drive from Torbay, which is where the family home was, to Mount Pearl, which is where Diana was living in an apartment.
That's how far apart my parents lived when I was a kid and they got divorced, so... That's, totally fair.
Yeah. So Diana had full custody of the boys, and Gary had visitations every Saturday for the day. So the routine here was that Gary would drive over to the apartment, pick the boys up, he would spend the day with them, and then he would bring them back later that evening.
Okay. Yeah. Totally normal custody agreement. Again.
Yeah.
Divorce kid here.
Sure. Yep. And again, we don't know when they separated. We don't know how long it's been since they separated. We don't know a lot about their marriage, but we do know enough that we know that Diana had full custody of the boys and didn't get to stay in the family home. I don't know. That just was like kind of a
weird
thing for me, but I'm not the child of separated parents, so I don't know. Well,
maybe he bought the home before.
Totally.
They were together and that was a clause in their marriage. Maybe they had a prenup. Like, there's so many things, but...
Yeah, or, like, maybe he was the one that was paying for the mortgage. Weird. Who knows? But I just was okay, that's...
Maybe she gave it up willingly, knowing, she couldn't afford it.
Perhaps, yeah. And we don't know. So that's just a thing that stuck out to me, but not...
Maybe she didn't want to be under his roof anymore.
It could be completely
power
nothing.
To ya, girl.
Yeah, so that morning, Gary called Diana to let her know that he was going to be late to pick them up.
Okay.
Diana let Gary know that their youngest son, Mitchell, was actually not feeling very well that day and suggested that maybe he should stay home with her. But Gary immediately shot this down and was adamant that all three boys get ready to be picked up by him soon.
Hmm. Okay.
So he was late.
That's already a little weird to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Sorry, how old is this kid again?
He's 4.
Yeah, dragging around a sick 4-year-old for the day is not fun.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. He only had one day a week with them. Maybe, like, this was a really special time to him and he didn't want to... We don't know. So,
I just think it's, like, your kid's best interest. If they're sick, leave them at home.
It just, again, it sticks out, right? So, Gary,
I just have my backup already.
Yeah, Gary clearly picks up the boys. He's a bit later than usual, but they go about their day.
It's a he has an attitude and then he's late? Ugh, okay.
Well, he called to say he was going to be late, right? But yeah.
Oh, okay.
But that's when she was like, well, you know, like maybe he should just stay home with me. He doesn't feel well. And he's like, absolutely not. So yeah, he picks them up late. He takes all three. They go about their day. November 9th, 1996 was actually the day after Diana's 39th birthday. And it was normal for the boys to be dropped off from what I could find at around like 8:30 to 9:30 p.m.
Okay, so they did like a full day with their dad. So, okay, they just weren't allowed to do the sleepover part, so makes sense.
Yeah. So, however, this day at 8:30, Diana receives a phone call and it's Gary on the other end of the line. He tells her the boys would not be coming home. And says that he had rigged his home to explode if anyone tried to enter.
So, okay.
Diana says they then had, quote, choice words, and she demanded to speak with her sons. However, Gary told her that she would never see them again and that she would know what it feels like to turn 40 without her kids. He then said later and hung up the phone.
Whoa, okay, this is going a way different direction than I thought, or at least at a different pace.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Marshall just, like, slammed his body into the door.
Yeah, Wednesday does that from time to time, but at least she's little, so it's just like...
No, Marshall's like a thunder. So, Diana said when the phone hung up, she immediately collapsed to the floor and just started sobbing uncontrollably. Gary did have a history of threatening to take the kids from her, and we find out he had a history of violence. Luckily, though, Diana's sister was with her at the time that this phone call came in, and so she was able to, like, step in and take action, and she called the police and told them exactly what Gary had said, and police deployed out to the family home in Torbay.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this case is going to get very convoluted. There's a lot of stuff.
It's weird because at this point you'd be like, okay, that's it. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's going to go and go and go, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So police arrive at Gary's home and they found that it had in fact been wired with two, like, massive 400-pound tanks of propane. So these are not like camping propane tanks. These are like the gigantic propane tanks that you would see outside of like a big business or something.
Yeah, like they're like 4 to 8 feet across and like probably 8 to 10 feet tall, right?
Correct. So he had two of these. He had wired them somehow to the house, and police determined that if anybody had so much as tried to ring the doorbell, the house and the surrounding area, including all the surrounding homes, would have been destroyed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Gary was an electrician by trade, so he would have had the skills to create a contraption like this and have it be legitimate, like have it not be...
Well, I feel like we've heard in so many shows where there's bombs that get made at home, too. People are like, oh, yeah, it's all just stuff you can buy at the hardware store. It's just how you put it together. Mm-hmm. So, like, having the wherewithal and the skill to, like, be able to do that on your own, he probably had no problem doing that, weirdly enough.
Gary was also described as quiet, introverted, resourceful. He had a history of violence, as I mentioned, psychiatric problems, and suicidal tendencies. So that's just a little bit of a background for you. Police were eventually able to defuse the bombs and enter the home. However, when they did, there was nobody inside. Diana believes that the bombs was actually part of a plan on Gary's part to mislead investigators and have them waste time while he got away with the boys.
I think he just hoped that the bomb would go off and they would have ruled that all of them were in there.
Maybe that too. But that's her theory on it. She thinks he's sneaky.
It was just a decoy move.
Essentially. To buy him time.
Well, because I think we know, based on like even just movies, as elaborate as that is, that the bomb squad is not a quick process.
Correct.
Like, there's a lot of testing involved before acting.
Yeah. So to add to this, Gary's 1989 Ford Tempo was also not in the driveway like it should have been. So at this point, police assumed that he had taken the boys somewhere in the car, but had no indication as to where he might have taken them. Newfoundland, as we know, is an island. And so it's possible that he could have taken them on a boat and taken them off the island. But he would have had time at this point to get away because there was so much time spent on defusing these bombs that he created.
It reminds me of the Michael Dennehy case in the sense that they're like, by the time they really got a grasp of the situation and got a handle on searching, they were like, he could be on a ferry off the island.
Yep.
And at that point, it's not that it's impossible. It's just a needle in a haystack.
Yeah. Well, and we didn't have the same level of ability to, like, put out things
like
to the public.
APBs and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, like, now when there's a missing kid, you get a notification on your cell phone immediately.
Oh, an Amber Alert.
Yeah, an Amber Alert, anything like that. Like, it just wasn't, we weren't as equipped for that back in 1996.
No, not at all.
Despite exhaustive searches, Gary and the boys were nowhere to be found, and their whereabouts remains unknown to this day. So, Gary Joseph O'Brien was born on October 17th, 1956. He was 5'10" with blue eyes and was 132 pounds at the time of the children's abduction. He was last known to have gray hair, a mustache, and a false tooth. He was a smoker and was known to frequent swimming pools and arcades, which is just, like, creepy to me.
Today, you're really selling this guy.
Yeah. I don't know. That just, like, weirded me out.
He's got a false tooth and he likes to hang out at the pool.
And, like, yeah, why? I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I also like swimming, but chlorine is just gross. So I limit how often I take myself to the pool.
Gary would be 67 years old today and was 40 years old when he took off with the boys. Gary would have been driving a 1989 Ford Tempo with license plate AMX635. Adam Matthew O'Brien was the oldest of the three boys at age 14. He was born October 28, 1982. Adam had brown hair, blue eyes, and was known to be 5'3" and 100 pounds. He was last seen wearing black and white Adidas pants with stripes, black and white Adidas runners, a black and white Adidas jacket with stripes, and a green shirt.
Oh, shit. Boy, had it going on.
He did. He had style, for sure.
He had, like, the high school tuxedo right there.
The black and white Adidas tracksuit that we all wanted.
Those tearaways.
So good.
You just pray someone doesn't pants you at school.
Adam had clear braces on his top teeth when he went missing, and he would be 41 years old today.
Okay, so for young people, clear braces are not Invisaligns.
No.
And just instead of the metal hunks they stick on your teeth like I had, they're these globs of what they say is clear, but it's just like white.
Yeah, I think you can get them in clear, but they, you can still see them.
Yeah, it's not Invisaligns.
It's not Invisaligns. It's Google clear. It. It's clear braces.
It's clear braces.
Trevor Anthony Thomas O'Brien was born May 8th, 1985, and he was 11 years old when he went missing. He was last seen wearing blue denim pants and black and white Adidas runners. Trevor has brown hair, blue eyes, and was last known to be 4'8" and 70 pounds. Trevor would be 38 years old today. Mitchell Gary O'Brien was born November 29th, 1991. He was 4 years old and just shy of his fifth birthday when he was abducted. He had brown eyes, brown hair, was 3'1". Mitchell was last seen wearing black and white sneakers. Oh, I'm sorry. He was 49 pounds. He was last seen wearing black and white sneakers, blue denim pants, and a blue turtleneck. And he would now be 32 years old.
Oh, that one, like, hits my heart just because it's like, you know when someone's just, like, your age and it's like, again, that's why it feels like so long. 27 years.
I know.
Like, he would have been our age.
Yep.
We could have crossed paths with him.
Yep. I know. It's wild.
It's crazy.
Gary O'Brien is wanted by Interpol and there is a $50,000 reward for information leading to his arrest. The abduction of the O'Brien boys made international headlines. Thousands of tips have come in from across Canada and the U.S. However, they have still not been found. So we do have a couple of, I don't know if I'm going to call them leads in the case, but things that happen in the case after the boys are abducted. So
okay,
nothing really happens at all. Like, they search for them, they can't find them. Nothing happens until 1997, so almost a year after the boys went missing, when an engine is found, just the engine of the car, is found 10 kilometers off the coast of what's called Flat Rock Cliff in Redhead Cove on the east coast of Newfoundland. This location okay. is northwest of Conception Bay and only 10 kilometers from where the boys would have been abducted from, or from the family home, or an 8-minute drive.
Okay.
After an invest... What?
I'm confused why this motor is such a... You'll get to it.
So they investigate this engine, and it was found to be a match to the engine serial number from Gary's 89 Ford Tempo.
Okay, well, I figured that's where you were going, but that's so weird that just the engine was...
No other car parts or remains are found at the time, even with a search done by a dive team, and Diana believes that this was another part of Gary's plan to mislead investigators.
Okay, maybe swap the engine and then ditch that one to make it look like the car went in the water or something. Like,
yeah, I guess so. There's no indication that there was anyone in the car when the engine went into the ocean, though many people believe that Gary drove the car off the cliff and killed himself and his three sons.
Do we know? Like, did he have a very... like, manipulative background at all, in the sense that, like, he would try to set people up or leave, like, breadcrumbs to the wrong way? And I don't know. I guess it's just, like, this seems like such a level of planning, if she thinks he's doing this, that it seems like maybe he had done something like this in the past on a yeah. small scale.
I got the gist that he was like that in their relationship, because she okay. seemed very convinced that he would do something like this.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will talk about this a little bit later, because we will go over some of, like, the common theories that float around the internet in this case, but I'll just leave that there for everybody to think about.
Simmering.
In 1998, there's another break in the case when Child Find Canada received an anonymous tip from a woman in Thunder Bay, Ontario. So this to me sounded like a tip line where you could, like, leave a message, because it doesn't seem like anybody actually ever, like, physically spoke to this woman.
Okay.
So for context, Thunder Bay, Ontario is approximately, like, 4,100 kilometers or 2,500 miles from... the home in Newfoundland.
It's half the country.
So it would have been a 50-hour drive from Torbay, Newfoundland, where the boys went missing from, and they would have had to take, like, at least one ferry.
It's literally the drive I did, the opposite side of the country. Like, you drive, and then you take a ferry.
Yeah.
And it's... I would find it hard to believe that they went that far.
Yeah, so the woman who left the tip said that she recognized pictures of the boys on a visa bill. She claimed to have babysat for Gary, and it seems like she knew some, like, intimate family details that hadn't been released to the public, like a nickname of one of the boys that had never been published. This tip, because of this, was considered by investigators to be credible, and so it is now believed that Thunder Bay is the boys' last known whereabouts.
Okay.
This woman...
I mean, I don't disagree. It does sound kind of promising.
Yeah. So the woman, though, never contacted investigators again, and all attempts to locate her and confirm the tip were unsuccessful.
Okay. Well, that's unsettling.
Yeah. Police released the tip to the public in 1999, but despite the ongoing investigation and numerous public appeals, investigators have to this day not been able to locate this woman who left the tip. Yeah.
That's so frustrating. This whole case is so frustrating.
It really is. So Gary O'Brien's sisters suspect that the boys and Gary are dead. Now remember, he did have suicidal tendencies and some history with like some psychiatric stuff. However, Diana firmly believes that her sons are still alive. She has even said that she believes Gary might have taken the boys to like a religious commune, a cult-like community, or raised them in like a super remote environment where they have no access to technology or the outside world.
Just to be able to reach out, kind of thing.
She also states that Gary had complete control over their sons and that they would have done anything that he asked them to do, and says it's possible that, like, he brainwashed them into thinking that she didn't want them or that she had died, or that's her
You
belief.
imagine? Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. She told a news outlet, quote, "I am fighting every day to see my children. Unless I have proof that they are no longer on this earth, then I'm going to keep at it and keep looking for them. Don't ever give up on your kids."
Agreed. Get it, lady.
This case has been featured on America's Most Wanted and the Montel Williams show. Like I mentioned, Gary O'Brien is listed by Interpol as an internationally sought suspect charged with abduction, setting traps likely to cause bodily harm, breaching undertakings, and breaching recognizance. The three boys are listed on the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary's missing persons website. And RNC Constable Danny Doiron, a supervisor with the Major Crime Unit, says the O'Brien case is an active and open investigation that has received leads as recently as December of 2016.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be that recent.
I know.
Mind you, I guess in 2016 we were teenagers, so if age progressions were really good, maybe.
I mean, it was 7 years ago. We weren't teenagers.
Well, we were younger, like
We were in our
late teens,
20s.
early
We
20s.
were in our
Wasn't
20s.
he a year or two younger?
Well, one of the boys was our
Oh yeah, it would have been
age.
26, I guess.
The
Not
youngest
16.
was our age, so they would have been a bit
Oh,
older.
okay. No,
Yeah.
26.
But
Okay.
still, we will talk about the age progression photos in a minute. The constable also said there are a number of reasons why an abducted child may not try to contact family. Coercion is a possibility, or they may have been too young to remember the abduction. However, I don't think a 14-year-old would be too young to like remember their life after
I
being
don't think the
abducted.
older two could forget if they wanted to, even.
The younger
But I think the
one, he was
youngest
four,
could.
sure, for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember stuff from when I was like 11 to 14. But then,
Yeah,
of course, we
vividly.
know trauma affects your memory and things like that.
Could
So,
blur it all out.
yeah. The constable said, quote, "Unless we know the exact whereabouts of these kids, now adults, and their father, we are always optimistic." So, anyone with information about Mitchell, Trevor, or Adam O'Brien is asked to contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-843-5678 or the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary at 1-709-729-8000 or the RCMP in Ottawa at 1-613-998-6200. So, yeah. Diana Saunders has never stopped searching for her boys. In 2011, she actually met with former Prime Minister Stephen Harper to raise awareness about her sons and other missing children. She went to the PM's office on May 24th, 2011, which was one day before the National Day for Missing Children on May 25th, and for the launching of the website missingchildren.ca. She said, quote, "You
Good for
have your
her.
highs and your lows, your good days and your bad days. Every time there was an occasion, for instance, Mother's Day, I didn't leave my house. I would literally sit by the phone, and I did that for all occasions, even on birthdays."
That's so sad.
So sad. After the abduction
Horrible.
of her boys, Diana actually moved back into the family home, believing that if they did manage to escape and come home, like that's where they would go.
Yeah.
Because that's like the house that they
If it's the only
knew.
home they've ever known, then yeah.
Which makes me think that perhaps the separation had been fairly recent and she hadn't been living in that apartment for very long.
Yeah, possibly.
Diana also says that there's not one reason that would come to her mind why the boys wouldn't contact her other than the obvious, and she just doesn't believe that. I think she's not allowing herself to believe that.
Yeah.
She does, however, believe that the boys, like I said, could have been brainwashed against her. Multiple age progression photos of the boys have been created over the years by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, with the most recent ones being in 2017.
Okay.
Age progression photos are used in long-term cases where a person has been missing for more than 2 years, and they are typically updated every 5 years. So that means we should see another set of age progression photos potentially in the next year or so.
Well, and like, imagine between a 4-year-old and a 31-year-old how many times you go through major changes. Like, mm-hmm. they would need to be updated to keep this case current. So,
yeah. I thought this was interesting. Each age progression photo takes roughly 8 hours of work. So it's like not like we see on the TV shows where they just like beep boop beep boop some variables into a computer and it just like makes it for them.
No, they have to like read all the points of the face and like age it properly and manually. I've watched a little thing on it.
Yeah.
A blurb.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Diana says she loves the photos and feels it's a way to stay connected to her children. She said, quote, "I love it when they do those age progressions. It's like watching them grow without them being present. I see such a strong family resemblance." So wow. sad. That is devastating.
They do also, I have seen that when they do age progression, they'll ask for other photos of people in your home, like family, mm-hmm. that they could take features from, like your father or mother, to see how people age as well. So it's pretty cool.
Diana says she's no longer in regular contact with the police as investigators don't want to contact her without a credible tip. In an effort to, like, shield her from false hope.
Yeah. Why re-traumatize her for no reason?
Yeah. Christy Zekowitz, who is the director of missingkids.ca with the Canadian Center for Child Protection, has been working with Diana Saunders for a number of years, and in 2011 was part of the help launching the National Missing Children's Service. She said, quote,
That's impressive.
It really is. Yeah, and that's like that big Missing Children Canada database that we have now. It's crazy to think that was launched only in 2011 for some reason. It seems like really recent. It doesn't seem like
it's been out long enough to be as effective as it is.
Yeah. I don't know. I just was like, oh, wow.
Built up as it is kind of thing.
That was only like 12 years ago. Wild.
Hey, technology these days, baby.
Yeah, it moves fast.
Sure does.
Christy said, quote, "Parents need to be able to live their lives and find happiness in their life without feeling for a second that they have stopped searching." She added her organization helps link parents with others who have missing children. And she said, quote, "Until we have answers for her boys, we will continue working."
Aww.
Numbers for the National Center for Missing Persons and Unidentified Remains, which is an organization within the RCMP, shows that there were 45,288 reports of missing children in 2015. However, 58% of those reports are removed within 24 hours and 91% are removed within a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it's like pretty high rate of resolving them.
Completing it, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's kind of talk about this case a little bit and the theories and the happenings. So again, like I mentioned, it's widely believed that Gary drove the car with the boys in it over a cliff and into the ocean, killing them all. However, there are quite a few people still who believe that they are alive and living in, like, another province or another country. So let's talk about the theory that they went into the water. Only the engine was found. There was literally no trace of anything else. I feel
like there has to be another piece of debris.
So one of the things that I saw was that this part of the Atlantic Ocean is hugely vast and very choppy, which is true. The Atlantic Ocean is huge and it's very choppy. And it is quite plausible that they would have been able to be like carried away into the ocean. But I agree with you that if the engine was found, you would think that something else would have been found. Like, yes, the engine is probably like the heaviest part of the car, but other parts of the car are heavy. Then,
that it, well, yeah, logistically, that one just kind of.
I just feel like there would be some other trace that the car went in the water.
Yeah, like, how does the hood not come off, yet the engine's able to just, like, slide out of the car?
Well, and, like, every other piece went into the vast part of the ocean except like, the engine came this way. Like, where are all the hoses
and little clamps and pieces and stuff? Like, there should just be other shit floating around with the engine, I think.
You would think. So, yeah. That one is difficult for me because, like, yes, while the engine is probably the heaviest part, it's just not super plausible to me that every other trace of the car went into the other side of the ocean, but the engine just, like, stayed floating around.
Nope. Same.
So.
I don't get it.
That's it. I don't know. I just don't. It also, like, how do you roll an engine off of a cliff?
You don't.
So how does that happen?
I don't know.
I know. So that's just like a mystery to me. Like that's a big part of this mystery is like, where did that engine come from? How did it get there? Mm-hmm. How do you just push an engine off a cliff into the water and not the rest of your car?
He just pulled over the edge a bit and opened the bottom of the car. Just...
Yeah, just like none of it makes sense to me. So that's, you know, I don't have a lot of answers there, but I thought I would open that one up for a conversation. The other theory, of course, is that the boys are alive and they're living in, like, a religious cult, an Amish community off the grid somewhere. Like I mentioned before, Adam, the oldest son, was 14 when they went missing, so I personally feel that he would have, like, remembered his mom and their life, and... Like, he would have known their phone number.
Without a doubt. Their address, like, the basics you teach your kid in case they get lost, even.
So, yeah, I guess unless he took them entirely off the grid, like, you know, perhaps to an Amish community where there are no phones or something, and, like, brainwashed them, you know, you would think that he would have tried to, like, phone her or something if he was still alive, because also...
There were some kind of indication.
Diana said that her and the boys were, like, extremely close. Remember, like, she had full custody of them. They saw their dad on the weekends. Like, they loved their dad, but they they obviously had a really, really close relationship with their mom. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was, so we know now that Gary was late to picking up the boys that day.
Yeah.
And was, like, adamant that all three boys go with him that day. So my assumption here is that he was late to pick them up because he was busy setting up this elaborate bomb at the house. And it's very possible he never even took them back to the house.
Oh, I don't think he did.
Yeah.
Because he says that and then leaves with the boys. Mm-hmm. He hands the note, remember, and then leaves the house. So, according to him, the bombs were already set. I don't think he would have, like, deactivated them and gone in the house and then activated them again.
Well, he calls at night, remember, right? But he says he's going to be late. And so my assumption is that he's setting them up in the morning. That's why he's late.
And then he picks up the boys and just, like, starts driving.
Correct. Kind of thing. Like, early. And then calls her from, like, a payphone or from somewhere else.
I guess it's highly plausible, too.
To say they're never coming home. So, like, possibly would have given him time to get away or figure something out. Yeah.
Okay.
But, again, whether it was that he managed to take them on a boat and get them off the island and start driving to another province, or it was to... Well,
that's the one thing that's just a wild card. Did he make it off the island? Because if so, then a lot of these things are... You're right. He probably just set them up, and that's why he was late, and then just took off.
Well, you just had another car engine laying around and did, like, a little swaparoo? That's a big
job. I mean, what if he had already swapped it and the engine was just like in the garage and he just was like, oh, that could work if I ditch the engine that has the same serial number.
I mean, if he plotted to put these humongo bombs together, because again, that's not something you can just go to the hardware store and buy. Like, that would have had
to be you have to like planned. Call the propane company, don't you, and be like, beep boop beep boop beep, hi, I want to have this giant ass tank outside my house, actually make it two. BOGO.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he would have had access to something like that with his job, but...
Well, he's a trades worker, so yeah.
This is maybe. All seeming more and more like it had been planned for a while.
Which I agree.
Makes me feel more like potentially he did take them on a boat and get them off the island, because why would you do all that drive them off a cliff?
He created a window.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a magic trick, like, look over here while I'm doing something over here kind of thing.
Yeah. That is literally all I have for this case. I do not have anything else. That is
bonkers, though, if this guy did go to these lengths just to, like, throw people off their scent.
I know.
But also, like, we've seen it happen before. It's not out of the question. And maybe he really did just want to run away and raise his boys.
Well, and the thing he says about, like, you'll know what it feels like to not have your kids on your 40th birthday. He was 40 at the time that he abducted the boys. And so I assume that he had recently turned 40 and it wasn't like he didn't have them on his birthday. Like
it wasn't his day with the boys.
He was upset about that and trying to get back at her in that way. But again, like we know that Gary had a history of psychiatric problems and suicidal tendencies, and I do tend to be a believer that the simplest answer is usually the right answer, which to me in this case would be he drove the car off the cliff.
Yeah, I think it's easy to go that route, and I do think that there's a probability that that happened if he had maybe a short capacity of what he could do once he actually had the boys in his possession, because I think it's one thing to plan it, but then to actually pick up the boys and go through with this plan and then be like, oh shit, who knows?
Yeah. Who knows is exactly it. I don't know.
No. I feel like unanswered ones, I usually at least have like a guesstimate of what could have happened. But in this one, I don't really feel like my gut is leaning me to any which way of what could have happened. Because part of me feels like, yeah, he set all this stuff up to just like totally throw off the idea of what he was doing and make it look like he maybe killed himself and the boys and lived on. Mm-hmm. Or he could have potentially panicked and actually killed himself and the boys. I think they're both highly probable.
Yeah, like had a plan to leave but then panicked.
Yeah, I think either is an option. I don't necessarily know if he planned to kill the boys.
Well, the propane tanks and the elaborate plan wouldn't make sense. Why would you do that? You had them all day. You wouldn't have needed to do that. Yeah,
like
it just
seems like it's to distract.
Yeah, it really does.
Otherwise, yeah, why even call and say anything? And, like, he wanted to hurt her. Mm-hmm. And if he was going to, and this may sound callous, but if he was going to kill the boys to hurt her, wouldn't he have just not said anything and made it so that they would have been discovered somewhere?
I know.
I don't know. I guess these are just, we hear certain things that just don't sound normal in this case.
No, this is a very complicated... Heavy air quotes on
normal, not that any killing spree or kidnapping is normal, but... You know, our people get what we're saying.
Yeah, 100%. There's just, like, a lot of elaborate planning here to just... If the answer was you just drove the car off the cliff. Like, you didn't need to do all of that.
Yeah, I think a murder-suicide at the end of the day seems like a bit of a cop-out after these elaborate plans.
Yeah.
If I'm honest. Yeah, so and to put it as bluntly as possible.
Well, and then we have this phone call that could potentially totally legitimate and perhaps... Gary found out that this woman called in and threatened her or something, which is why she never reached back out.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I don't know if
this... I think the phone call to her, the mom, too. Like, why do that?
Right, yeah. No, I'm talking about, like, the tip.
No, I know. Like, he could have potentially figured out who that person was, approached them, and scared them into not
Yeah, and like
say
we don't know
anything
if the
further?
nickname was like a generic nickname that lots of people call their kids, but it seemed like the police felt like this was a piece of information that like they had not shared with the public, and this woman knew it and said like she had babysat for Gary and all this stuff.
Or maybe they approached the mother to confirm this woman's name or run it up the flagpole and she went, I know that person. It's not a real tip. Like, people are fucked, to put it bluntly. It could have been someone who was associated with the dad throwing out a tip to throw off scent and then just never following up. There's so many options to this. I'm so
It
confused
seemed
as
like
to why people
investigators
do
really
this.
felt like the tip in Thunder Bay, though, was like legit. It was just some woman that had babysat for Gary, watched the kids, recognized their faces, and called it in. But then, yeah,
I think three boys is memorable. Like,
why would you
that's a
not
lot of
reach back out,
energy,
though?
and
And that's where I'm like, maybe Gary like threatened her or
yeah.
something and said like, if I found out you phoned this in, if you ever do it again, I'll like, who knows?
Well, and the babysitter is probably the one person that gets an intimate view into your lives. Maybe saw something sitting out that had a different name on it because you go by a different name or something, or you know, maybe just put the pieces together like she did. It's just, I don't know, it's messed up.
I know. So,
I think I just want to hope the boys are still out there alive somewhere,
oh, of
even if that means the
course.
dad kidnapped them,
Of
but
course. I just feel like this case is
I'm
so
hesitant.
convoluted and has so many weird things that, like, we just had to talk about all the possible options.
Oh, for sure, because that essentially is the case right now, too. Like, it's the weird details we'd be reviewing anyway, so why not review them? And
So,
we will definitely keep everyone updated on this case.
if you do have any information about this case, you are urged to contact any of the following: the St. John's RNC at 1-709-729-8000. You can reference case number 96-30299. You can also call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS, which is 8477. That's 1-800-222-8477, or online at www.canadiancrimestoppers.org/tips. You can also email the National Centre for Missing Persons and Unidentified Remains at canadasmissing-DISPARUS Canada@rcmp-grc.gc.ca. I will put this all in the
I
bio
was
for
about
this
to say, we
case.
will post this in a
We
link
will.
that you can click so
Yes.
beautifully.
And the case reference for that one is 1996-006630. But that is it for this one. I don't have anything else. I scoured the internet and there's just not where they were missing a lot of
Well, it sounds like
information.
he really disappeared, so
They
there
really
really
did.
couldn't be much.
Now there wasn't a case that somebody just told me about that I want to try and find and just ask you if you've ever heard of this before. Hold on.
I'm holding.
Have you heard of the case of the Turpin family?
Yes.
You have.
Yes.
Okay, I had never heard of this before. My lash lady actually brought this up to me the other day, and it's like this horrific child abuse case.
Yeah.
13 children or something held captive for years.
Oh, yeah, like kept in cages essentially, and like just. I wanna say, and again, I could be wrong, but I feel like there was a lot of like incest as well with the older
Oh,
children and the
gosh.
dad.
Oh, that's so awful.
And by incest, I just mean he abused the children.
All right. Yeah, and they found out about this because one of the, like, a 17-year-old jumped out of a window
Yeah,
from the
one of the
home.
kids was like brave enough to actually try to escape. And yeah, it's super messed up. And they're just like, they dress them up almost like dolls,
That's so
if I'm not
wild.
mistaken.
So yeah, somebody asked me about this, if I had heard about this. It was my lash lady when I was getting my lashes done, and I was like, no. And then I was like, you know what? The case that I'm covering this week is not that long, so I'm gonna ask Katie live on the air if she's ever heard of this, and we're gonna just chat about it for a second. This is, yes, yeah, so crazy and so sad. I didn't know. So anyway, I will be going to research this now for no reason other than it's sad and I want to know more.
Well, let us know in the details, or sorry, on the Instagram post, if you would like us to cover this case. It's not Canadian, but this would be one where we would like some input. Like, would you like it covered?
Because it's definitely she's a gonna different look into it anyway. Kind of case than we normally do, but like caged and shackled to beds. Like, this is so horrifying.
Do you think we should do Tamla though?
Yeah, we have a few cases from the U.S. that we really want to cover, so that might be a 2024 thing.
I'm also quickly seeing if there's any updates to that case, because now I'm like, oh, wait, did I just go down a rabbit hole?
I don't think there are. Tamla Horsford, that's one that's
a mystery. It's just, it lives rent-free in my head. Mm-hmm. And there's been a full independent autopsy at this point that I have yet to review.
I think that
might be what I'm going to partake in this evening.
Yeah. This is actually what we talk about when we turn off the recording, everyone. So if you're just like curious about what happens when we hit stop, this is really what we talk about. We're just giving you the live version now because this case wasn't very long. But yeah.
Agreed. And I mean, this case, every article starts with this case lives rent-free in my head pretty much. Like, same idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched another documentary about the Idaho 4 today. So if anyone's wondering where I'm at with that, I'm still balls deep. I can't stop. Brandon came home and was like, you've been watching things about this case for a year. And I'm like, yeah, Brandon, just let me live.
Let me live my life, sir. Just
let me live. Sometimes we cases all have take interests. A chokehold on me and I can't stop. Okay, you know what? No, I have to say something about that. If you've been following the Idaho 4 murders, the one thing that just I can't wrap my head around with this case. There are many things that I can't wrap my head around, but if you are this smart criminology guy, I don't think he was smart, I'm just saying, like, this is how he's portrayed.
Heavier
as
quotes.
This guy who's doing his master's and
well, they imply that he's intelligent. Yeah,
sure. Why in the fook did you take your phone with you and then turn it off for the exact time the murders were taking place? And then just, like, drive back home and... Why didn't you just leave it at home?
Or even if... And I mean, not to help him out, but if you notice you have it, you know, a few blocks from home, turn it off there and then don't turn it on again until the next morning or something. Like,
I just... There are so many things about this case that are fucked up, but I just don't understand. I don't understand that.
Well, you should send me a link to whatever you watched, because I don't... obsessed like you do over this case. Like, I don't lose sleep over it, so I would like to educate myself a little.
Okay, well, I have watched every podcast known to man that has covered it, every YouTube
video. That's impressive, because podcasts are hard to watch.
Well, listened to. Mentally watched. That doesn't make sense.
I've played it in my brain.
Anyways, I can't stop. And then the part that pisses me off is, like, we should have been in a trial by now. And he waived his right to a speedy trial, so this shit's just gonna drag on. Like, these
poor...
So everyone's
just gonna take advantage of that.
These poor fucking families. Anyways, you guys got to hear a little bit of our regular-ass rants that happen off when we're not recording.
Which is just us talking probably about the same three cases.
Yep. But
our pets or our spouses.
But I hope everyone had a Merry Christmas. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, thank you for three wonderful years. You've been more than supportive. We would not be here without you.
We'll see you in the new year.
We will see you in the new year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
I'll call you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
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 How do I stop this shit?
I'll stop it.
Okay. Fuck me.